I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, inviting you to join in on the conversation. If you have any kind of a real estate type of question, call it in or text it in. Same number applies, 651-989-9226. On a rainy Saturday, Chris and Andy, what's your week been like as far as real estate, huh?
Andrew?
Well, no, I always like to let you go first, you know, seniority.
That's nice of you. You're usually not even here by the time that intro finishes. So it's kind
I'm
of
still
like,
running up the stairs with my coffee spilling all
I know,
over
but the old intro, we used to have a lot of time in between.
But you should follow that up with explaining why I'm usually running late, because I'm usually printing brochures and getting things open for – I do a lot of open houses on Saturdays. Never usually have a day off here, so we're busy working. But anyway, no, so this last week was actually surprisingly better than the week before. We were seeing a little more activity on showings. We were – seeing some offers coming in again, which is good.
We had a lot of follow-up from the parade.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
After the Parade of Homes ended, and now we're
well, there's the next. I always say this is the next 4 weeks where people come back and actually make their decisions, because you know, we sparked their interest during the parade. Maybe they saw a bunch of houses, got their ideas, took their pictures, and now they've got their Pinterest board all put together with all the ideas. Then they start coming back now looking for the actual estimate. Like, hey, can you sit down, show me what it costs to put this bathroom in this floor plan with, you know, or this kitchen or whatever. It's actually a lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, no question. We have one of our fans' favorite guests.
Yeah.
Jeff Zweifel. First of all, he's a nice guy, and plus he can ask all the attorney answers.
Yeah, you guys cannot do that.
Nice, right. But not buy breakfast. Nice, but nice, you know.
Yeah.
Hi, Jeff. Good to see you again.
Yeah, hi, Danny. Good to be here.
Well, maybe we could – I can't believe we got a text and it
kind of
leads
on
right
topic,
into what
right?
we're going to talk about.
Well, let me read it. It says, how hard is it for a seller to get out of a contract with the agent?
All right, well, we brought the real estate attorney along.
Exactly. We can speak as brokers, though.
Okay.
Obviously, it's a binding contract that's in place. Obviously, if you're not working very well together or there's something you know, that maybe wasn't understood.
Uh-huh.
I always say, hey, let's talk it through and see if we can't figure it out. Otherwise, walk away. There's some agents that put in their contracts that, you know, if the seller's not satisfied, that they can be released out of the contract. Sometimes it might cost marketing materials up front or something. Mm-hmm. But how about from a legal standpoint, Jeff?
Well, Chris, I would say that, you know, I agree the contract is binding. And from a legal standpoint, you'd really have to look at, did the agent – do something that to break the contract or breach the contract. Otherwise, it is a binding contract.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times people have anticipation of what's going to happen during their marketing by their agent. So, and we're obviously talking about a listing contract here with a real estate agent where you're trying to sell your home. So, in that situation, if there's nothing written in there that basically says they can cancel, then it's a contract that has to be disputed to cancel. What I've done in the past, and I've had other people that have said, hey, what about these scenarios? And so we've had to be a little more fluid with our contracts where we'll say, hey, listen, here's a cancellation fee that could be paid at any time. If you pay this, you can get out of your contract. And the reason why they do that, guys, is because when you're hiring somebody to do a job for you and you're asking them to invest into your property, and at your will, you're saying, hey, I could let you go at any time. It's just, to be fair, it's not their fault that, you know, they've spent that money, and you can obviously retain those marketing materials to reuse with some other agents. But the idea there is, it's what are you looking for as a client, and then writing your contracts appropriately.
Yeah, I think sometimes too, what happens is that maybe it's not talked about up front. And I think that's the caution people should do, is discuss all of that. How are you going to market this property, and what are you going to do? Because you know, and expectations, setting expectations, because, hey, if you've got a $3 million house you're listing, you know, those don't sell typically right away.
Yeah.
They don't sell in 5, 10, 15 days like something under 300,000 would do. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You're setting up for the long haul. And so make sure that your marketing is what you want it to be. And then that puts in place. But I think people think that, oh, hey, we haven't had a showing. Well, maybe the market isn't giving the showing, you know, right. Or maybe there is something wrong. Maybe your photos aren't good, or maybe our price is wrong.
But if you hired a good agent, you know, like, good agent meaning that they have a history in that area, they're very successful, and they're marketing your property. And like right now, if they're not getting showings, I look back at, like you just said, Chris, it can be the marketplace where there's just not any fish in the pond. They could be running $1 million worth of ads that month. If there's nobody there to listen or read the ad or whatever, then there's nobody there to absorb it. So it comes down to being reflective. I think that before I'd fire an agent, I'd look at the market. I'd say, okay, what has sold in the last 30 days in my price range that you used as comparables to come up with my value? If nothing is sold, well, guess what? Everybody's still holding their basket. Nobody has actually sold anything, right? So if, on the other hand, three of them have sold, then you want to look at why did they sell and analyze, and then sometimes applying some of that knowledge to your listing will gladly or greatly benefit you.
Yeah, and we have the luxury market, the bigger stuff, and typically the bigger stuff, when I say that, is usually over $1 million. The fall is usually a good time. And so sometimes mm-hmm. when people are listed them in the spring and the summer and they're sitting, it's kind of sometimes it's like, hey, just hang on.
Yep.
Hang tight, and all of a sudden it does happen, and they do sell. But just keeping your expectations straight, I think, is a big thing.
What do you think, Chris, though? Why do you think the fall is good for the high-end market? I mean, I'm just curious.
Because everyone's so busy.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally it kind of slows down. They get the kids back in school if they have kids, and then they can kind of sit and say, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it now, because you know what happens. It gets busy again. And you can, to me, you can kind of see everything still. You know, some people might do it in the winter, but once it starts getting back to that spring, I mean, that's so unpredictable on when you're going to get that house on the market.
Right.
Sometimes, I mean, last year, I mean, it was May and June before we had green and blue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and where your yards look good, you know, if you didn't clean up your leaves and they're still matted to the grass, I mean, that doesn't show very well, and you can't put your house on the market. If you didn't trim that outdoor trim, you know, and have it painted, you can't turn around and show it that way, because it's just going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What about that, Jeff, when you look at like what, so let's say I'm a consumer, I've talked to that listing agent's broker. Okay. And the broker ultimately holds the contract, right? So
that's right.
As a consumer, if you do have a problem with your real estate agent, you do want to find who's their broker and discuss this with their broker. Brokers, on the other hand, like at a higher level, may reassign that to another agent within their office. So they may have you interview some other people in their brokerage so you could relist with somebody else within the brokerage. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what if we don't get along with the broker as well and the broker doesn't agree with us? I mean, are there actions that we can take, like just not participating with the sale? I mean, can we just not show the house? Or what kind of situation are we put into as a consumer in that situation?
Well, I think you're put in a situation where you signed a contract and you probably still have to fulfill it. I think you can sort of stonewall it in some respects by not agreeing to price drops and things like that if the agent is suggesting it. But as a bottom line, if it's a 6 month or 12 month contract, you're kind of stuck staying with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that if you stonewall somebody and you just let your house collect market time for 6 to 12 months, you're totally killing yourself,
right?
You know, in the value of it, because that's what people look at. And then we've had listings like in the upper bracket that say, well, geez, why isn't it sold?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because they don't really buy until this time, but they're always looking for a problem. If it doesn't sell, there's something wrong. You know, and I always use the example of that beautiful pond in the back now becomes a mosquito infested swamp that monsters come out of it and attack people at night. You know, that's what they think.
You know, and I think too, though, the standing around the water cooler at the office and your friend just sold a $260,000 house and you're trying to sell your third house you've owned and now it's $750,000. That $750,000 does not have the same route or experience or marketing plan as the house that was $250,000 or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, what's hard for us as natural social creatures is we all want to talk to each other and say, well, how, you know, my house sold in 3 days. Well, your house was $250,000. At $750,000, it might take 6 months. And you look at the market time or the saturation rate and those price points, and it'll kind of help you anticipate how long you should realistically expect to be on the market. But Chris, as an expert, what trigger points do you say, okay, we've gone this far, and then when do you say, okay, we need to recognize a price reduction or the market's rejecting us? Where's that?
It typically if we've had buyers in to look at it and they're rejecting it. You know, bona fide real people that are looking for that price range and don't feel it's there. Hopefully mm-hmm. we've known that from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people like to try, hey, let's just try it here and see if it works. In reality, that kind of hurts you. And I always caution people saying, you know what? I mean, it's kind of like in the upper bracket. Hey, what's the difference between 1.5 and 1.7? Well, there's a lot of difference because when that 1.5 comes up,
a Bentley,
1.7 comes on. Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah. But when it comes on, they're all excited to go look at it and they don't go into that house thinking, well, it's 1.7. I'm sure they're thinking about taking 1.5. They think it's 1.7. They say, gosh, it's just a little too much. And then it sits and then it becomes, mm-hmm. well, what's wrong with that house? I knew I was right. It wasn't
so
worth that.
So you're saying pricing your house expecting a discount is not the way to go?
No, I don't think so. But in some cases, there might be if there's no competition and maybe that competition is going. So mm-hmm. analyzing the market and know what you're doing is good. But yeah, we should people have calls, legal questions, and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, we finally have the attorney in the house.
Yeah,
bring him.
We are going to kind of go into purchase agreements and how people can get out of them and or try to keep people in them.
Cool.
But if you do have a real estate related question, especially since Jeff, the attorney, is in studio, by all means call us or text us. Same number, 651-989-9226. Good morning. Welcome back to our real estate show. Chris and Andy in studio. But you guys brought a special guest. Let's get a proper introduction, though, Jeff, if we may.
Zweifel? No, Zweifel. We're joking around. Danny was just saying when he was on vacation and was it
Switzerland?
Switzerland. Yeah, they actually have some chips named after Jeff, which I should be very proud of, I guess. But
yes, maybe next time he can bring in some bags of chips.
Yeah, it'd be good chips. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
So are you going to finish your introduction, Andy?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know I'm not good at this. Jeff with Mark V. and Zweifel and real estate attorney. You guys are involved in everything from short sales to family estate planning to, it sounds like, a little bit of everything relating to real estate. And we always like to bring Jeff in because then he can answer the legal questions that a lot of times, you know, Chris and I have to skip over. So,
all right. Should we get to the phones?
Let's do it.
All right. 651-989-9226. That's the phone number. It's also the text number, so you can use it for that as well. Ed is calling from Fridley, I believe. Ed, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. So my question is, I'm going to be selling some lakeshore property, a small lot on the lake out west of here. I never sold anything before like this. I have a couple neighbors that are interested in. They've made me some offers. Do I have to, so I'm assuming I have to get a realtor involved just because of all the hoops and whatever. But can I sell for the price I want to sell, or is it something I have to let the realtor decide?
No. Absolutely. I think the realtor gives you the information to make an informed decision. Ultimately, the seller, you're the boss. You get to make that decision and what to do. And I think if you have friends and you want to be able to go through paperwork, I mean, you can hire a realtor for that. And you could also put those people as exclusions later on if you list it as well. I mean, most people will allow that. And you just say, hey, if Jimmy and Bobby end up purchasing this, I only have to pay you this much to do the paperwork. Then it probably turns into a facilitator agreement, or an attorney can handle that too.
Yeah, Chris, the attorney could, but the attorney could handle the paperwork as well. They wouldn't be able to help you as much with the pricing of it, though.
Yeah. So it might be smart to maybe get a realtor out there with the expectations that, hey, if we do list it, I want to have these guys as exclusions. But
– yep. Well, you can hire agents
get a price
too.
From them.
Yeah,
so
to get the value, but you can also work with agents on a limited capacity. You don't have to hire the full, 7% real estate agent. They may be able, you just tell them, say, this is what I'm looking for. I already have three people lined up. I want you to help me establish a fair price. I want you to walk me through all the contracts and take me to a good, title company that'll close this and clear the title for everybody and make everybody happy. What does that cost? And that can actually be a reduced rate commission for sure.
There you go. There you go. Okay. So, situation that we run into a lot, I shouldn't say a lot, but we do run into it at times where people enter into a contract. They clear all the contingencies. So typically an inspection contingency, maybe it's a sale of a home contingency, and then it becomes a valid purchase agreement. And we're moving towards closing. Okay. Obviously, they have to get their financing. But all of a sudden, then at that point, the buyer says, you know what? Just kidding. I don't want to buy it, and I want out of the deal. At that point, I mean, what happens?
Chris, yeah, I would say that
tears. Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, I mean, I think what the seller has to do is realistically look at the what are their damages? Is it significant where they want to pursue this buyer and try to collect from the buyer, or is it something where they're just better off getting the house back on the market and getting it sold as soon as possible?
I think that's what typically happens because, I mean, if you're going to go after someone, I mean, now you can't really sell your house, you know, but typically a buyer will then say, hey, I'm not signing a cancellation until you release that earnest money, you know, to me. And if I don't sign a cancellation, you can't sell it to someone else, or you can sell it subject to getting the cancellation done. But I mean, what people that put you in this position, so let's just say that we had a house that you had multiple offers in it in 3 days. You know, and it was hot and everyone came in. And then all of a sudden, 62 days later, before the 75th day, which is closing date, they say, forget it. I don't want it. You know, and now you have to go back. I mean, it's hard to create that excitement all over again, you know, if someone walks away. So how can you get rid of that person and then come back for damages? So say it sells for $425 and then all of a sudden the next time around, hey, the best we could get was $400 and we're $25,000 difference. I mean, what do you do in that situation?
Well, that's a situation where you're really looking for a court solution, you know, where you can't get the buyer to sign a cancellation, but you want to reserve your rights to pursue damages. And I mean,
what would you do on the buyer's end of that? I mean, if you were representing the buyer, would you say to the buyer, hey, don't sign that cancellation? Or, I mean, if you sign the cancellation, are your rights done? You know, and what I'm talking about is canceling the purchase agreement so you can go sell it to someone else.
Well, you know, if you look at the standard form that the Realtors Association uses, it's really set up to just cancel it and everybody go their separate ways. So you'd really have to seek attorney advice and do a customized agreement where, you know, where the seller's rights are left open to pursue legal action later on.
Mm-hmm. Andy, what do you think the odds are that a buyer would agree to that? I mean, to leave it open-ended like that.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I tell you, I look at, you know, the way the contracts are written, and I understand things keep evolving, but the word earnest money to me has lost all of its teeth. I mean, totally. It's gotten to the point of where it's like, why even collect it? I mean, you might as well get their thumbprint saying it's, you know, here's, I'm the real person, I want to buy your house. And then at least you save the hassles or the false anticipation of being able to keep the money. Because that's where I think most sellers get kind of in a pickle is that, they think, oh, geez, they gave us $10,000 of earnest money. Let's go out and sign that 6-month lease while we're waiting for our new house to be finished. We'll let them move in. And all of a sudden, the person cancels 2 days after you just signed your lease. And now you're stuck in a 6-month lease and you want to retain that $10,000. I'm telling you, good luck. I mean, it's almost like you have to, before you sign things that will put you in a disadvantage, like as a seller in that case, I would triple check that the contract is going to be valid and they're going to perform. Or you may want to do an amendment or an addendum that would say that at this point, the earnest money goes what they call hard, where it's non-refundable. That separates the buyers and the walk-awayers pretty fast, because when money goes hard, that means it's not coming back. There's no refund policy. You perform or your money's gone. And that's where I think it actually has to start going. I mean, especially with some of these builders building new houses where people will build for 6 months and then they, you know, show that they're non-contingent and they really are, and then all of a sudden they can't perform, and it's a mess. And these builders are sitting on, you know,
but here's the
lot
problem.
Of money.
Here's the problem too, and I know we got to go to break, but it's fine. It's great to do, and in theory, it's exactly right. But I'll tell you what, the next person at the next house don't do that, and then they'll say, "Well, I'm going to go buy that one instead." And that's the problem. I mean, if everyone did it and we made it like a standard thing, then that's different. But if it's just a rogue person that says, "Hey, if you don't purchase this, I'm getting all your earnest money,"
right,
you're going to say, "Well, what? No one else does that. Forget it. I'm going somewhere else."
Well, good thing we have an association that can maybe help us step in, and the forms committee can work on this and help legally make this work, so that it means something again.
Exactly.
You know?
All right. We'll take this break. We have another half hour of the show to go. If you have a real estate question, especially involving a legal question, Jeff is in studio to help us out. Good morning. Welcome back to our real estate show. Chris and Andy with Jeff in studio. If you have any kind of a real estate question, especially a legal one, call it in or text it in. That same number applies, 651-989-9226. All right, Chris and Andy, where do we go from here?
Let's get to these.
That's a great
question. There's a ton of questions here. What is the typical length of a new real estate contract? Is it 6 months? I'm sure they're talking about a listing agreement.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anywhere, I mean, 6 months to a year kind of just depends on what you negotiate.
I think it's fair to ask what the absorption rate is of that price range in that area. So if there's, you know, 18 months of supply, don't expect your house to get sold in 6 months necessarily. You might allow that agent to have a longer contract, but then discuss the exit strategy. So if you say, hey, listen, after 4 months, I want to pull it. How do we separate ourselves? And then most agents, as long as it's upfront, will work with you.
Well, and I think a lot of agents, what they'll do too, is that you got to remember this is a risk versus reward business. And we're spending all our money up front with the hope that it's going to sell, that we're going to find a buyer, that you're willing to sell and it gets to close, and it closes, right. Then we get paid.
Right.
So sometimes maybe, hey, if you want a shorter listing contract, why don't you offer to pay for the marketing materials up front?
Sure.
You know, and then you keep your options open as well. A lot of people don't like to do that, but that's a way in which.
We've always said that. I mean, some of the other communities that are out like on the West Coast, they were doing that for a while. Where there was prepaid commissions, and then you would dictate how long that person would run with that commission rate, and you were paying them for their time, their marketing, their expertise, their networking, and it's a whole different prospect. You're actually hiring them with a marketing plan to attack, and you pay them to do it.
Yep. Jeff, is it possible to add a person's name to the title of a home well after the purchase and closing?
Oh, absolutely, Chris. Yeah.
That's a text question, and all you have to do is you can quit claim it over to that person and give them that. And if you're say if you were a single person in there, then you got married, they're already in on half of it without having their name on it.
They are. There's a marital interest, but they are not on the title. I would always, from a lawyer standpoint, want to ask, why are you adding them and what are you trying to accomplish? Because there are several ways to give them an interest besides just a deed. And so it would be important to know why they're doing that.
Yep. Okay. I'm married and own a rental condo. I want to record a transfer on death deed, also known as a Todd deed, right? My son on the condo. Personnel at the county recorder, Hennepin County, said I needed my husband listed as grantor and sign the deed. Is this correct?
Yes. And the reason is that, kind of like you were saying, Chris, when you're married, your spouse signs to release their marital interest. So husband and wife have to sign. A Todd deed is a conveyance of an interest in title. So
one to buy, two to sell.
Correct. Yep.
Next text question. Please explain dual agency. First of all, dual agency, Minnesota law requires that first substantive contact, that we start talking about numbers and stuff like that, that we disclose the different types of agency in a real estate transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And there is four different types that they explain. And one is the listing broker. They represent the lister. Whoever has the sign on the property works in their best interest at all times. Then there's a buyer's agent, buyer's broker, who represents the buyer and their interest. Then there's a thing called dual agent. And what a dual agency means is that the brokerage, the company, represents both the buyer and the seller, and they can't work to the detriment of either of the two. And they can't discuss price terms or motivation unless otherwise directed by one of those clients.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if your seller says, hey, Chris, you know what? I want to sell this house at $500, but I'm telling you, I would take $300. I can't go to the buyer and say, hey, just offer them $300. They're going to take it.
Right.
If they do, you lose your license. And the fourth one is a facilitator. And that facilitator is what we are when we first meet that person. And all we owe them is confidentiality.
Well, that's maybe like what Ed, in the beginning, when he was talking about selling his lake lot out in the West Metro, that might be a wonderful opportunity for him to work a facilitator agreement.
Exactly. Okay, we've had our house on the market since June 6th, and we have a six-month contract. We've only had four showings with no offers. We've updated as much as we can, and our realtor tells us we are at market value. We have lowered our price by $15,000. Any suggestions? Also have had four or five open houses. We're on a golf course, and we have a walkout finished basement. It's a Rambler for $380,000.
Jeez, sounds nice.
Yeah, obviously it depends where it is. I would be looking at what else is happening around you. But there's a little thing on there that kind of we did as many updates as we could.
Right.
You know, and that might be a big part, because I'll tell you what, people's first impression, your house has been showed about 5,000 times and it's been on the internet. Yeah. You know, when they look at it, they see it, and then they determine from that internet, hey, should we go look at that?
Right.
You know, and so there might be something that's not transferring, because 380 walkout Rambler for $380,000 on a golf course in the metro. That should be.
It seems like something. Yeah, there. The math is all there for a success story, but I think that the again, I would take a look at, have your, you know, do some analytics there. Have your real estate agent run anything else that's been on a golf course, maybe even go out 5 miles. Has anything sold recently that's similar in size, similar, and look at what they're getting, look at the amenities, analyze the heck out of it. Because, you know, what if you were at 375 and you'd pop and you'd sell now, and then you can go out and take advantage of the great interest rates and, you know, and reinvest somewhere else. Because sometimes, like I was saying, if the magic number is even $5,000 or $10,000 below, Chris and I agree on this, is that it will literally be a detriment. It'll cost you 6 months of marketing time sometimes. And you usually can't catch the market, especially now when it's getting a little softer. The market, you might want to list aggressively like 5,000 below what you consider to be market value right now, because that's what gets things moving right now.
I've been lucky to sell quite a few houses on golf courses. And I think it's also really important on the golf course, because not everyone wants to be on it, but everyone would like something open behind them, is to explain where you're located on the course. And if you're getting popped in the windows all the time,
right,
that might be a problem, you know, so you have to, but if you're not, you want to explain that. You know, because, hey, I'm not on the dog leg, you know, that gets hit every time.
So. Very true.
651-989-9226. We got folks on the phones. Let's go to Bill, who's calling from Elk River. Good morning, Bill. What can we do for you?
Well, good morning. I have a question. We have a piece of property with a house on it that we're looking to sell here in the near future. But we also have an inheritance piece of property that is not exactly attached to the property. But the only way to access that property would be to go through a piece of property, another piece of property that we will be receiving in inheritance. And so what we have is a piece of property that's free, a piece of property that is basically landlocked. You can't get to it from any other way. And then our piece of property is accessed through a permanent easement. Is there something special that's going to have to be done in order to sell our house on our piece of property and then wait for the sale of the other two pieces in order to, you know, it's an inheritance?
Okay.
Well, Bill, this is Jeff. Following what you're saying here, I would say that if you're selling the landlocked piece, you'll definitely have to create an access for it, and the buyer's going to want access right away. They won't want to wait until the inheritance is comes through. So there would need to be an easement, the likely way to do it. But
you might have a sale pending in an easement agreement or something like that. I've seen that before up in northern Minnesota, where you have the hunting land and all these, you know, lumber companies are selling off 40-acre parcels, but some of them don't have access, and that's a.
And I'll tell you what, Bill's pretty fortunate that his land abuts to that to give it access,
right,
because
for sure,
if it was someone else, they could hold them hostage to be able to put some sort of easement into it. And that's what you're going to need. You're going to need an easement, a road easement, to be able to get back to that property.
For sure.
So, but I think he was also saying that, I don't know if this easement, is Bill still there? If this easement is already given an easement, and he has to do an easement off that easement.
Yeah, that might be too.
That might be difficult.
But then you have to get the owners that are all involved in the easement to agree to an amendment to, you know, so
but
can
to
be
get
done.
The most amount of money, and if you're going to be selling these properties, to get the most amount of money is to be able to have that set up before you list it. It's so important, because when there's questions, there's problems. And when there's problems, there's no sale.
Do your homework.
You need clarification.
651-989-9226. That's the phone number. That's also the text number. Call it in. Text it in. Your real estate type of questions. Tell you what, let's go to Mark, who's calling from Minneapolis. Go ahead, Mark. You're on CCO.
Hey, guys. I really appreciate the show. I'll just ask my question, hang up, and listen. I got a question about wholesale real estate. It seems my take is that it's a kind of a loophole that lets people with absolutely no experience or no licensing get into the real estate market, selling people's houses at a discount. I'll just hang up and listen. Thanks.
Can I say I love you, Mark?
Well, that's awkward. But anyways.
It's not awkward if I mean it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And I think there's a lot of people that go around, just knock on doors, and then just try to be that middleman and get some money out of it.
Yeah, they're trying to flip stuff. But there's a number. There's a magic number. I don't remember what the exact number is. I think it's under 25 properties. You can get away with it. If you do more than 25, you're required to be licensed, I believe, even if you don't want to be. And or so what a lot of those investors will do is they do the we'll pay cash for your house, or the, you know, some of these, like even like the guaranteed offers and things like that that are out there. There's different ways they're putting different capes on, as I call it, to look different now. The big offers that you see all over the place, it's all wholesale. And that's the problem that I have, is that they're giving the illusion, especially some of the biggest ones that are out there, that, yes, we have our real estate partners and we have this. Real estate agents are completely differently subscribed to a different set of ethics, and they're out for your best interests. And if they're not, turn them in and get them out of this business. The investors are out for themselves, and they tell you that right away. You read their fine print. They say, hey, we're out for ourselves. We're going to get the best offer we can in here, and you're going to accept as low of an offer as we can afford to, you know, that you'll take. There's a lot of good companies out there. There's a lot of bad companies out there. So I always say buyer beware before. And you can always remember this. You know, Mark, you can always have a real estate agent involved with a wholesaler, and, you know, you go under contract and you can say, hey, listen, let's go to these different investors and we'll pay you a percentage, like a facilitating agreement.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have more show to come. If you have any kind of a real estate question, call it in or text it in, 651-989-9226. We are back with more Real Estate Talk, welcoming your phone calls and text messages related to that topic, 651-989-9226. Well, guys, we have callers, we have texters. Let's see how many folks we can help out here before we run out of time. Let's talk to Paul, who is calling about what, Paul? What is your question, please?
I wanted to ask him about an easement and how they work, and say if the other property, I own the one property, but the other property's got their own entryway, but they use mine as a round loop all the time. Okay. And as a shared part, and there's an easement on it, but I have to pay for the upkeep of it, I think, and so forth. So How does can a guy get out of that easement, or how does that work?
Jeff?
Paul? Yeah, this is Jeff. What I first do is get a copy of that easement and review it for yourself, take it to an attorney to review. Usually they run with the land so that you really can't get out of it. But you want to know what the terms are. Maybe you can negotiate new terms. You can always amend an easement if you and the other party are in agreement. So
there's typically some maintenance.
That's what I was going to say. If they don't pay their maintenance, it's considered abandoned, even though they're, you know, or whatever. There must be some rule with that. So if the easement says that they have to help maintain that easement, you know, and there's expenses related to, you know, Paul's situation, I mean, that's only fair to stick his hand out and ask them to pick up some of the tab, right?
Oh, yeah. I think, and if the easement calls for a maintenance and the one party doesn't do it, you can certainly go to court to try to enforce the reimbursement for those, for whatever wasn't paid. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, back to the text questions. As a seller, do you think the spring market will bring higher prices, greater traffic, and more interest than the current Twin Cities market? I think it depends what you have. I'm bullish for next year. I don't think we're going to have an issue, but that doesn't mean that if interest rates change, more people put their house on the market. I mean, all of those affect it. And make sure that your house is ready and prepared. I'm telling you, that's a big thing, and that's a thing that can cut through a lot of weird markets.
Hit the market with a 10, not a 6 on your, you know, things you've done. So what I'd say, Chris, to add to that is this. I think that I'm looking at it as well as looking with rates the way they are and things, the economy, everybody's working. I think it's going to, I don't know. I think with an election year, when people emotionally are charged up about things that, you know, are out there, I think that sometimes it lays a little bit flat. And I think that next year wouldn't shock me if we laid flat. You know, we did a 1-2% appreciation, not negative, but a positive, right? So you're still going up. But I think that there's going to be a limited audience out there. I think, I don't know. I'm a little more less bullish than you are on it. I think that you need to be smart, and I'd get my house on the market now.
I'm always bullish, though. That's a little part into it.
That's why you wear the horns?
You got to be optimistic. Okay, we're doing large and small projects to get house ready to sell. Our house is older. What is a reasonable amount to invest in a home ready for the market? Things like updating countertops beyond painting and cosmetics. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't think there's a dollar amount per se. It's where you have to bring yours. And I'll tell you what, I never suggest repairs or improvements until I've gone through the whole house. Mm-hmm. Because you have to understand the whole thing, because you might do some things just in the kitchen and the whole bedroom is in the basement and it just took that away from you, you know? So There might be some other things that you can do and say, you know what, gosh, let's save the money on the countertops. Mm-hmm. Let's just try to get this as neutral as we can, as clean as we can, get the stuff out of here, and we'll probably make more money.
Another idea, take your real estate agent that you're using to sell your property, go out there and preview the houses that you consider to be your direct competition. Look at what they have. If they all have granite, you might want to upgrade to granite. If they don't have granite, I wouldn't make the money or the investment then. But I always say 1% difference makes you 100% difference in the eyes of your consumer. So there like you if you're even just a little bit nicer, a little bit better, maybe a better lot, better countertops, all of a sudden, boom, you sell and the other five sit there crossing their, you know.
Get my secret. I mean, if you want an investment, kind of a small investment, but a real investment, is a backsplash. It's a 2019, 2020 backsplash that make your countertops and your cabinets look so much better.
Let's go to the phones. Valerie is calling from Stacy with a question. Valerie, you're on CCO.
Good morning. We own a little over 5 acres zone commercial property in Hugo. And I don't know if you're familiar with the old Steakhouse Carpenter's restaurant that was located in Hugo years ago and burned down. But they tried to rebuild, I believe it was about 15 or so years ago. And the city put so many demands for infrastructure onto them that they abandoned their rebuild project and never got off the ground. And now we are trying to sell our property, and we had a billion with a B dollar company interested in it, big attorneys involved, and the city again put so many demands on them that they backed out. The county has increased our property taxes 403%, so they're looking at it as it's, you know, very valuable, and yet the city is making it, in my mind, worthless.
What do you think? What's the question?
Well, our bank also owns 68 acres that are, they're trying to sell, and they say, my question is, have you heard of other people having problems selling property in Hugo? Like, I think this is because, you know, Forest Lake, everywhere north is booming, everywhere south is booming, and Hugo is just like nothing, just a little bit on Frenchman Road right there off the freeway. But is there, like, something going on in Hugo?
What do you guys think?
Well, Andy, you know that area.
Yeah, Jeff, actually, I'm selling a lot of houses.
The booming Forest Lake area.
What? Yeah, it's because Jeff lives there that Forest Lake's booming, of course. But, you know, I think that it comes back to is your local government. I mean, are they pro-business or are they anti-business? Sounds like they're anti-business. I know, and I'm just at 10,000 feet looking down from what I'm hearing. And a lot of problems that happens is that, you know, I mean, Valerie, I've seen other people that have big commercial properties that they tax the dickens out of them to the point of where they have to give it back. And they literally, even though they own it free and clear, they can't keep up with the $80,000 a year in taxes that they're being assessed. And then it becomes a, you know, you take the loss by having the property transfer back to the county. But I've seen it happen where people can't afford to hang on because they tax them to death. So I actually do not envy your position.
Jeff, any comments?
I think it's, you know, get to know the local representatives there, and it's more of a political.
One last quick idea. I had a gentleman I used to work with that was a developer. He would go back and plead to the city that, hey, listen, this isn't going to sell for 20 years. I need this rezoned back to farmland, and I want it zoned ag. And then they started farming it again and actually had a little pumpkin patch, or they'll put apple orchard or whatever on there, and then the taxes get reduced so you can afford to keep it. I'd strongly recommend you head that path as fast as you can.
Okay. All right. We got a text question here. I've heard your explanation about how expensive it is to build smaller square footage, one level homes. My question is, when they build the new townhouses that have three floors, why can't each floor be a one level townhouse? Wouldn't that reduce the cost even with an elevator? I'm talking about the demand for retirees who want one levels, but they're not affordable. Absolutely.
I agree 1,000%.
Absolutely. And putting an elevator in is a wonderful thing. We talked about a guy doing a project in Savage that's doing that exact same thing. He's actually putting – it's very interesting. He's putting in two elevators. So they each have their own elevator from a tuck-under garage standpoint. So one just goes up to the one level, and the other one goes all the way up.
Again, it comes down to zoning. You have to be zoned for a triplex. And in a lot of these areas, these cities, especially suburbs, don't have any zoning for it. So – they want either apartments or single-family homes, it seems like. So,
let's try to grab another quick call. John is calling in from Wayzata. John, what's your question, please?
Hello.
How can we help you, John?
I have a question. I have a friend who former husband passed away, and they have two daughters, and the daughters are trying to resolve, passed away unexpectedly, the daughters are trying to resolve the sale of the house and that, and I'm assuming they will be having, they'll be getting a death certificate and all those things. What other else would you recommend to make, you know, the process of taking care of the house, retaining the...
Let's have Jeff. We only have less than 60 seconds, John. Sorry. Jeff, quickly, what do you think?
John, I think I'd, you know, if there's still a surviving parent, then I think they would work with that parent. If there is no surviving parent, then the daughters may have to start a probate proceeding. They have to speak to a lawyer about that process in order to have authority to sell.
Yeah, and taking care of it, that's pretty important too, because those houses can go down real fast, you know, if you're not taking care of them, but visiting the house and making sure you trim up and stuff.
We need to bring Jeff back. This guy's too good. We got to bring Jeff back again and get him on air.
All right, let's find out. We have seconds to go here. How can we get in touch with each one of you guys?
Well, if you go to andyandrooney.com, you can get a hold of me, and Andy and Jeff's stuff will be on there as well.
All right, good deal. Jeff, good to see you again.
Thanks,
we'll come
Danny.
Back again. Yeah, we'll have Jeff back. We have more questions to get answered here. Next week, we'll have more Real Estate Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.